C2PR. Number 12A.
Now we come to spirit as love. Soul. And we find here another way of reflecting divine qualities, and it's one of the most surprising ones. After she has said that we need the quality of gratitude for the good already received, and now she says, if we are ungrateful for life, truth, and love, and yet return thanks to God for all blessings, we are insincere and incur the sharp censure our master pronounces on hypocrites. That's quite terrific. He says, if we are grateful for the good already received, she says, now we are hypocrites. If we are not grateful for life, truth, and love. So we get here another sense that she says, well, what is really the good you have already received? And actually, if we take it as we have taken it before, that we said, well, the good already received at this point is the first prayer. And the first prayer was showing us what? The nature of God. That we should desire to know God as he is. And Mrs. Eddy presented the nature of God, so that actually gratitude should be gratitude that God is God, that God exists, that there is God as life, truth, and love. Now, this is important to see. You see, this paragraph here really gives us the key for what we say constantly in the last few years. We are at the threshold from the 6th to the 7,000 year period of the Bible. That threshold is taking us out of the 6,000 year period, in which science has been given to the world. Science has been given to the world as its system, explaining being through science as the infinite ideas of that system. That's a 6,000 year period, that which we have been studying all along in the last years, namely, what are the ideas of mind and spirit, what are the ideas of the Word and Christ, what are the ideas of the levels. And now she wants to take us out of the 6,000 year period and says there is a 7,000 year period, which is actually the most important one. And the 7,000 year period, we know, is that period where consciousness has the tonality of the capitalized terms and therefore is only calculating in capitalized terms and no more in ideas. So, in spirit, as spirit, she says, are you grateful for ideas, for the idea of God, what you have seen? That's all right, but now you come to a higher standpoint. Now you have to identify your gratitude with the source of all goodness and not with the effect of the source of all goodness. It's not enough to be grateful what you have already got, but now you have to be grateful that God is God. That God is actually life, truth, and love. So that within ourselves we turn constantly to the allness of being, to the divine being that must be reflected. And if we want to reflect the divine being, it's not enough to reflect gratitude for the effect of the divine being. We must therefore reflect our gratitude of the cause, that is, the divine being. therefore, to be grateful for life, truth, and love. This is quite new, I think, for most students, because we have been trained, I think, either through religion or through a metaphysical or religious understanding of the textbook, to be grateful for things received, for the demonstrations we have made. And so you give on Wednesday evening a testimony of gratitude for the blessings received. And they are all nuts and no camels. But she doesn't do away with gratitude for the blessings received. She doesn't do away with that. That in spirit of spirit. But she says, this is not enough. You have to go forward. Your consecration, your reflection must be on the synonymous terms. So if we entertain within ourselves that consecration and that gratitude that God is actually life, truth, and love, then we really take in the whole sense of being and not just various expressions of the one being. And it's interesting how sharp she writes about it. That she says, you are a hypocrite if you don't do that. It really makes one shudder when one reads that. Anyway, I did to me at the beginning when I read that years and years ago. I said, well, how funny. I thought this is really something very good to be grateful for the things received. And now she says, but you can be a hypocrite. Naturally, see, if we are only grateful for the loaves and the fishes that we get, and we only study Christian Science for the loaves and the fishes, then this is insincere. It is very materialistic, finally. Very egotistic. We get something, and that's egotism. Whereas to worship being, the adorable one, as we will see in the Lord's Prayer, then we have a true sense of worship and of reflection within ourselves. Therefore, we get a new general atmosphere for the whole day for to live with, that actually our whole love is directed to say, I want to know what God is as He is. I want to know God as life, truth, and love. Because why does she say life, truth, and love? Why doesn't she just say, if you are ungrateful for God? Because we can always see that if we only would have mind, spirit, soul, and principle, that we wouldn't have very much. Because that which makes us aware of what we are is life, truth, and love. Because without life, the essence of life, we would not be. We would not have a sense of to be. And without truth, we would not be conscious of it that we are. And without love, we would have no hope in any way in what we are. So, mind, spirit, soul, as the principle of the nature of God, is fundamental to have a right sense of life, truth, and love. But that which we really have to demonstrate is not mind, spirit, soul. What we have to demonstrate, or what principle demonstrates, is life, truth, and love. Principle doesn't demonstrate mind, spirit, soul. Mind, spirit, soul is the basis of principle. But what principle brings out so that it becomes being, the divine being, is life, truth, and love. You know, if you once drive on a highway and you get bored about driving on the highway, well, just take this point and think out, what would my world be if there would be not a point of life. If nothing would be, if God would not be life, what kind of a world would I have? And you see the emptiness then. You would see nothing would be. Nothing would have a beingness. Or you think out, just think it out. I know I do that sometimes, and I've done it since 30 years or so. Just to think out, what would the world be without truth, if there would be no truth? If nothing were true? Or what would the world be if there would be no God who is love? Actually taken in its right sense, not in a human love sense, not in a lovey-dovey sense, but true love which says, I'm always at the point of fulfillment, and everything is always at the point of fulfillment. Think out what kind of a world you would have. And I think in this way, we begin to realize the importance of seeing that we have to be grateful that such a thing exists as that God is life and truth and love. Without that, nothing would be. Nothing would have stability. Nothing would have a standard or a stability. Everything would be shaking if it wouldn't be truth. And there would be no future, no hope, nothing, no unfoldment if being would not be of the nature of love. We would never know where we are going. We would go forward, backward, left, right, left, and so on, up, down. There would be no plan within which everything would evolve. So that's the depth of being grateful. To be grateful, not so much that I have a nice income, that I have a nice family, that I have nice children, that I have a nice job, that I have nice neighbors, that I have nice this and nice that. That's all right. That's wonderful. It's better than perhaps disharmony. I don't know. Sometimes disharmony is better. or one falls asleep in these niceties of being. But, yes. But really, to see the depth of being and to be grateful for life, truth, and love. In such a case, she says, the only acceptable prayer is to put the finger on the lips and remember our blessings, while the heart is far from. Can you see? There is no gratitude, no consecration, no reflection if the heart is far from. Divine truth and love, we cannot conceal the ingratitude of barren lives. Again, very sharp and hard, that our lives are barren. That our lives are really barren as long as we don't have a gratitude for the fact that God is life, truth, and love. We think life is full of all sorts of niceties on a human level, but actually it's barren because the only reality there is God. And so if our whole love and gratitude is not directed towards God, our lives are actually barren. We may not feel it because we are asleep in the material world, and so we may not feel it for a long time, but still, this is not reality. See here, also, you have interesting combinations of the synonymous term in here. Actually, it's the first one was, if we are ungrateful for life, truth, and love. Now we know that life, truth, and love is what? It's the word in Absolute Christian Science. It's that word which we know from the Genesis that is behind the days of creation. Because the 7 days of creation, those who remember Genesis, when we did Genesis now, that behind every day of the 7 days is always on a higher level, on the absolute Christian Science level, the impulsion of life, truth and love. That behind every day of creation it says, God said, let there be life, and he made it factual truth, and it was good, it happened, it fulfilled itself, love. So that we saw there that behind every creative activity, behind every sevenfold creative activity, and we consider here constantly the sevenfold creative activity, the seven prayers, the seven subtones, that behind there is always a higher level from which the level of Christian Science draws its authority. And that's the absolute Christian Science. And that standpoint of absolute Christian Science always shines through from time to time. Not always, not in every paragraph. We have not seen that in every paragraph. But here and there, we have somewhere another instrument playing in the symphony that says, don't forget there is still a higher level, namely absolute Christian Science. And from there, you really get your authority, from there you get your impulsion, from there comes the impact on the human. So don't forget that still exists. And here, where she is depicting now the transition of spirit to spirit as soul, as identifying our worship with God, she brings in that word of God as life, truth and love. And she goes on in that paragraph and says then at the end, while the heart is far from divine truth and love, again she brings in a synonym combination, which we know is from the level of absolute Christian Science as science. So she brings in the whole range of absolute Christian Science and says, as long as your heart is far from truth and love, and what means truth and love in absolute Christian Science? It means really that highest sense, or where we see that truth is telling us that all the facts of being are love, are already at the point of fulfillment. So whenever she brings in truth and love, she brings in the sense that she says, you know, that everything is already okay, that everything is already at the point of fulfillment. It isn't something that has to be fulfilled. It isn't something that we take step by step until we reach fulfillment. That's the level of Christian Science. But that level of Christian Science is only there because there is a higher authority, namely absolute Christian Science. And that absolute Christian Science says, I am the impulsion of everything. I am life, truth and love, and I impel the whole prayer. I impel the prayer of mind. I impel the prayer of spirit. I impel the prayer of soul and spirit, principle and life, truth and love. And I impel it because I am science. I am truth and love. Because I am already fulfilled. I'm already truth, already the factuality of being that is already at the point of completion and fulfillment. So she does that, we can see that, how she does that, in order always somehow to correct perhaps a misconception of the reader. The reader could get the misconception that he has to climb up to somewhere through the seven, through the seven prayers or through the seven symptoms. And he says, yes, that appears to you that way. And it's right that you go that way. But that's only the way you approach God. It isn't reality. In reality, you really have the absolute sense of Christian Science, namely that there is only one authority going on, and that is God Himself as life, truth, and love. That impels always everything and is the only impact on the human, and it is that impact that is from the point of view of truth and love, namely that everything is already completely fulfilled. Yes? So, little by little, you see, we hear that symphony going on, and suddenly you hear another instrument coming in. You hear another level of consciousness coming in and telling us something higher. So that we are not, getting used that we always have to have a word, a creative sense of being. That we have a days of creation sense. We know that days of creation sense is only an approach to being, how the creative law works. But in the absolute Christian Science, we don't have a creative law. We have the law of isness. We'll see as we go on that she brings in other combination adapted to the situation. All right. Anyway, coming back to the thread, we can see here soul as soul says us, you reflect the divine being by being grateful for that divine being. And not just for the effect of that divine being. Or else you have a barren life. Life really becomes big and beautiful the moment thought is more and more concerned with the tonality of the capitalized terms and thinks in that allness of being and in that infinitude of being. Yeah, our epitome is that unself gratitude for God, you could say for life, truth, and love, and not primarily for God's blessings, unfolds a fruitful life, not a barren life. So again, we have the fruit of spirit, how what it does to our life, how it unfolds our life, that it is a spiritual growth. We have a lot of these fruits in here. So only that gratitude to life, truth, and love, that soul, brings a fruitful life, spirit. We go to the next one, to principle. What we most need, so we hear and say, oh yeah, I want to have that which we most need. And so it says, well, it's the prayer of fervent desire for growth in grace. Again, it's a rendering that is biblical, that is a bit religious, in order to bring out that all what we really should care for is that we grow spiritually. That we grow in a graceful way spiritually. And this is expressed, is reflected in patience, meekness, love, and good deeds. So here the reflection is spiritual qualities like patience, meekness, love, and good deeds. To keep the commandments of our Master, at once you hear a tone of principle. To keep the commandments. And now this reflection is pointed out as principle, which says you reflect it if you keep the commandments. Keeping the commandments means to be in agreement, to be in unity, to be in oneness with the commandments of our master. And follow his example is our proper debt to him, and the only worthy evidence, you again have the fruits, the worth of it, of our gratitude for all that he has done. Now you have another gratitude, the gratitude for the exemplar, what he has done, and you can show forth, he says, that gratitude, or Mrs. Eddy says, by keeping the commandments. What are Jesus' commandments? It isn't Moses' commandments that she refers to. And the great commandment that Jesus gave was, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy mind, with all thy soul. She will come to that passage later on, so that it shows again you should be grateful for the Lord thy God, and not for the blessings that come out of it. So that outward worship, now you have the counterfeit of spiritual worship, of spiritual reflection, is the outward worship, is not of itself sufficient to express loyal and heartfelt gratitude. You have again a touch of principle, of loyal, heartfelt gratitude. Loyalty, you know, is an idea of principle, keeping the commandments, that's principle, of loyal and heartfelt gratitude, since he has said, if ye love me, keep my commandments. Now, text interpretation. Can you see that when you read a longer paragraph here, it's not too long, but a middle long, that you watch what is the pith of it. And the pith of it usually is brought out in by repeating that pith various times, that either in the same terms or in similar terms. Now here it's all about commandments. Keep the commandments. You have first on the line 5, and then you have it on line 11, and in another rendering you have the loyal and heartfelt on line 10. Can you see? In this way you get the pith of it, so that in your interpretation you are not misled. You could be misled. How could we be misled? We could say, well, what she says here is that it is expressed in patience, meekness, love, and good deeds. So this is the pith of it. She writes it, it's there. The text is there. One has to be clear, out of a long text, what is the core of it, and not what is the garnish of it. And therefore one must ask, what is she constantly talking about? What is the central theme? And you feel here, the central theme is that she approaches the good deeds. What are the good deeds? To keep the commandments. To keep the commandments means to have heartfelt gratitude, that you are, with all your heart, loyal. And again, she ends it up and says, that's why Jesus said, keep my commandments. So that keeping the commandments becomes slowly your main point in it.